time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Are you really an independent contractor? Find out in seconds for free at PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Midweek Roundtable has assembled for Wednesday, the 27th of May. Joining us, Newstalk 1010 political analyst Scott Reed. Hello, Scott.
How do you?
How did those bacon cheeseburger chips, how'd they end up tasting? I was looking at your Twitter.
Mostly like mustard. That's how you know it's a cheeseburger, is that they've got a little mustard ketchup thing in there. I assume it's just some paint chip they throw in, but it's so yeah, they're objectively awful, but I didn't stop till the bag was empty.
A glowing review. Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star joining us as well. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Jay.
Any snack recommendations on your end?
The pork rinds that Ryan gets in Dallas. They're like a Mexican flavored ones. They're really tasty at 3 a.m.
That's the way to go. He found them at the back of the cupboard. There's such a story behind that, and I can't tell it publicly at all. But there you go. I knew he was going to go there. We'll start off with the story the mayor was just talking about. Toronto has put on their website where COVID-19 hotspots are located within the city, in the city confines. You can put in your postal code. You can scroll over the interactive map, toronto.ca, and then you go into the COVID section of it. It's there for you. I look at it, and I information isn't a bad thing. It's always good, but I think at the same time, we have to be careful with this information. Scott, I made the point to the mayor. He said, that's the right message. Just because you don't have a ton of outbreaks in your neighborhood doesn't mean you are all of a sudden immune from the virus or that you're safe and that you should be changing your behavior.
Yeah, exactly. I listened to that discussion. I thought it was an important point that both you were making, which is, it's an indication, but it's not exactly an entire instruction manual in terms of how to get through COVID. So, I'm glad they're doing it. And I know that there was an interesting debate among people as to the general validity of it. I think it's more important for public health officials to know this information, but it doesn't hurt for the public to know it, and you can sort of adjust accordingly. My biggest problem is I got to do the postal code thing, because I looked on the interactive map. There's no streets, so I have no idea. I don't know which neighborhood is mine. I'm fiddling around. I'm like, is that my neighborhood? Or is that my neighborhood? Because they're weird little sort of jigsaw puzzle pieces, and so I'll get on top of that eventually.
So you did it. Let me ask you, what was the reasoning? Is it just curiosity, or did you truly, are you truly going to change behavior in any way?
Pure curiosity. I don't know exactly what I would do to change my behavior. I've been living a pretty limited monastic lifestyle, to be honest with you. So, when we came back here in March, because we were away, we self-isolated. And I can remember thinking when it started, wow, I can't wait till this is over. It's so miserable. And then when it was over, it was like, oh, there's now no difference between being self-isolated and not being self-isolated. I mean, I can sort of grab a mask and spring for a grocery run, but that was about the difference. So, yeah, it was curiosity.
It's interesting because you can talk about it, Ryan, and we'll throw this over to you too, Robert. You can talk about living in an area that doesn't have a lot of cases, and does that affect your behavior? But here's someone that is affected from 71010. And Robert, I'd love your thoughts on this. I live in a hotspot, guys, and it makes me not want to shop in my area any longer. I think that's a normal reaction.
Yeah.
I agree, Jay. I think that is a normal reaction, but I think that it's a little wrongheaded. I mean, it's at the end of the day, you don't know where you can catch this, right? You theoretically could catch it at any grocery store or LCBO or whatever, whether you're in a hotspot or not. And a hotspot, what's the hotspot, the biggest one in the city, I think it was 400 cases. Well, that's not that many, really, if there are thousands of people around. So I'm not sure that, I think the information is good. It's useful to have it out there. I think transparency is good. I think the more we know about this virus, the better we will all be. But I'm not sure this is something that I'm going to be poring over a map to say, oh, well, before I go here, I want to check to see how many cases there are.
Yeah, and I think, there'll be some people in the camps that will. Hopefully that's a small amount of people that say, okay, I'm going to stigmatize a neighborhood based on this number. And I think hopefully the vast majority of us will say, no, I'll just keep on keeping on until people tell me that it's all clear all around this province. Speaking of transparency, let's talk about the premier today. He is establishing an independent commission to look into our long-term care facilities, very similar to the SARS commission. He outlined what it may look like.
We will establish an open, transparent, and independent commission. We will get to the bottom of this as quickly as possible. The commission will be independent of the government. It'll be open and transparent. There'll be public hearings. They will call witnesses. The reports will be made public, and we'll get answers, because our seniors deserve nothing less. Their families deserve nothing less. They deserve answers, and we will deliver them.
Scott, you know, you follow the world of politics, and I'm curious to see what your take here is. I think that a commission like this is only as good as this is a headline and a talking point for a lot of people. You know, right now, this is one of the things everybody is talking about. 6 months from now, 10 months from now, will it still be, and will this commission still have, you know, sort of full license to rebuild, or at least give the recommendations and have politicians implement the recommendations to rebuild these long-term care facilities almost from the ground up?
So it's the reflex move for a political management problem. There are two reasons to do an independent commission and inquiry. And the first is that it's necessary to get to the bottom of what happened, that there are huge question marks and huge challenges. And you need, you know, like Walkerton or something. You need someone to like go in independently and say, all right, let's scrape the bottom of the barrel, find out what occurred. The other reason is you just want the process and time. And to be candid with you, I sort of side with Andre Picard in the Globe and Mail on this, which is, we don't need a commission. Like, I mean, seriously, this thing has been studied to death. We do know what the gaps in the system are. We do know what the problems are. And you can just collect the shelf full of studies and examinations and investigative reports from various media organizations that have been conducted over the last 20 years and say, let's put them together, stack them together, let's take the appendix of recommendations, and let's make some decisions. So I understand why the government is doing it. It's arguably, if I was in government, this is probably what my move would be. But I'm going to tell you quite honestly, just to sort of, you know, shine the sunlight on it, they don't need to do this. They can just make the decisions and make the changes.
Yeah, you know, Robert, I tend to agree with Scott and lean into with what Scott's saying, because I think the premier's bent on this originally was, you know, in the name of time, we're going to get stuff done in the now. We don't need a commission. We don't need to wait for that type of information to come out. We've already got sort of a Cribs Notes or a Coles Notes version of what's been going on all this time. Then the military report came out, and of course you had the NDP asking time and time again for this type of commission to be established. So I guess the premier said, okay, well, since it's top of mind for everybody, now's the time we're just going to get a commission going.
Yeah, except that this is just an expedited version of the commission that the Tories had earlier announced. And they haven't, it's not a commission of inquiry, a public inquiry, which is what the New Democrats have been seeking, which would be, would be subpoena witnesses and have a lot of power that this commission, which will be appointed by the government, will appoint the commissioner. We don't know who it will be, but I'm reliably assured that it'll probably be a Liberal, because the Tory government will not appoint a Tory to do this. So I think, and it'll be a targeted thing. I think I agree with Scott, though, that we do know what the problems are. I mean, we just had the Wetlaufer Commission of Inquiry into, you know, the serial killing PSW nurse. I mean, you know, we know there were lots of recommendations in there that the government was beginning to implement. I'm not sure that this is the caramel secret. We know that this is what the problems are. We just have to start deciding that we're going to spend the money to solve them.
Scott, I want to ask you a follow-up question to something that you said, because I'm not inside baseball and politics like other people are. I don't know if you've already figured that out about me, but it's true. when you look at a commission and you look at the decision to do that, and you say if you were in government right now, you'd probably make the same move. Why is that the move?
To process it out and to delay and spread out the political pain of it. If you say we don't need a commission, I mean, first of all, there's a couple of Rob's right. This isn't actually the demand. So first question is whether they're actually going to get pushed into an independent commission of inquiry. So that may well happen. So we may see that. The reason that you go to this, if you're in government, is you say, OK, so we'll throw this thing off to the sidelines, say, my God, it's an important thing. And we're going to get some experts to look at it. Then they're going to come back, make recommendations, then we'll deal with it. Well, then it's 18 months later. Then you sort of see it. Then it's a way of defusing the bomb. And that's why, as opposed to saying, all right, you know what? We know enough. We're just going to make some decisions, be accountable this moment now, and invite the criticism of what you do and don't do now. And so that's that's why it's occurring. Unless you don't know what to do, in which case it is good to do one. So that's why they're doing it. By the way, one other massive topic of discussion, and this is a fundamental decision that needs to be made. I know, Jay, Ryan, you've raised this. They got to make a decision about private care. It's astonishing to me that the companies, and there's only three or four of them that have built this system fundamentally, have not been crucified more in terms of their conduct, their cost models, and the way that they've driven these things. And, to me, that's the nub of it. A government doesn't really, they don't want to make the hard decision right now of saying, you know what, the for-profit model that we permitted to occur here needs to either be radically revised, which is going to force us to interfere with that model, or it needs to be annulled and just gone. And they don't want to make that. They want the process to give them time and room to breathe on that.
Yeah, Robert, and I would just say to that, listen, I believe in the annulment of it, to be quite honest with you, and maybe a small fraction of the private sector gets some play in all of this, but all signs and all roads sort of lead back to that moment in time where this was privatized, and now, sure, these are long-term care facilities, but are these seniors getting the care that they need in a for-profit setting? I would argue no, but that's got to be a decision that's going to have to be made quickly if we're going to be talking about baby boomers who are getting older and who are going to need these homes in the here and now.
No, exactly, Ryan. And this is something that all governments of all political stripes have been kicking down the road for years and years and years. And, you know, the chickens have come home to roost. I mean, it's just, it's one of these situations. It's not that sexy, quote unquote, an issue in terms of dealing with seniors that we are warehousing in these massive facilities. Governments would rather devote their resources to cancer care, to pediatric hospitals, to initiatives like that. And this is not a partisan shot. I'm not trying to say that. I think that this is just something that's been hiding in plain sight for so long. And I think it has taken this awful virus to expose this problem that we have not wanted to deal with.
Gentlemen, interesting and thoughtful conversation this afternoon. Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
Scott Reed, Robert Benzie, of course, always great to have the two of them on the show.